Okay, so we then get on to key ideas about the interpretation of the middle way. So moving away a little bit more from the Buddha, but thinking about the middle way as such and what it means. So traditionally in Buddhism, the middle way means the avoidance of eternalism and nihilism. Yeah, so eternalism is traditionally seen as a belief in the eternality of the soul, a continuation through many lives. That's the way it was understood in the Buddha's time. And nihilism, or annihilationism, is an alternative way of putting it, of translating it, is seen as the denial of that belief. So it's often associated with the idea that when you die, that's it. Termination of experience. So, in the traditional Buddhist context, the middle way, well, at least what you might call the philosophical middle way, is avoiding those two extremes, and it's often put as reliance on conditionality rather than belief in the soul or denial of the soul. Again, the Buddha identified those particular metaphysical views as the ones we should avoid in his time, but it seems to me that that's going to be very much a product of his time. There were certain metaphysical views that were popular at that time, which were important to people. So the belief in karma, for example, was believed to be kind of what held society together, and what gave people a basic sense of ethics was the idea at the time, but that's no longer the case in our context. Even religious conservatives in our society don't believe in karma for that matter. So there's going to be a different set of metaphysical views that we encounter. So it really seems to me that what the Buddha's pointing to here is a general principle that all claims beyond experience need to be avoided. Certainly not just eternalism and nihilism as understood at the time of the Buddha. But the other key insight of the middle way, to me, is this relationship, this association between ethical practice, or perhaps even you could talk about psychological states associated with ethical practice and philosophical views. So even in traditional Buddhism, there's this association between eternalism and asceticism. So the five ascetics who, sort of stood on one leg all day and painful things like that, they were said to do that because they believed in the eternal soul, the Atman, and they would be rewarded for their penances, for their asceticism in the future, in their next life. So there was a link there in the thinking of the Buddha's time between continuing to exist forever, and having a justification for ethical practice. And on the other hand, of course, if you didn't have that, if you didn't believe in future lives, then you wouldn't have a reason to be ethical, so you just eat and drink and be merry and get the future. And that's the idea often associated with the life in the palace and that the Buddha was involved in overindulgence, self-indulgence. So that's all there in the Buddha's time. But if you try and trace that, if you try and transfer all that too literally to other contexts, like our context, it doesn't quite fit. And that's really what I tried to do in my PhD thesis, which I was working on between 1997 and 2001, which is really what started off this whole middle way philosophy work. So what I was setting out to do there was to work out what eternalism and nihilism meant in relation to the philosophies that we encounter today, particularly the moral philosophies. And I did that, and you can read the results in my thesis, which I've published. But although that was a useful exercise and I learnt a lot from it, I no longer put a lot of emphasis on what I identified specifically as determinism and what as nihilism. That no longer seems quite so important. Because what turned out to be important practically is much more what was made of physical and what wasn't, what turned out to be not so useful. So although I think the link between philosophical views and ethical practice and psychological states, which the Buddha identified, is important, the specifics of how they link together don't seem so important. So let me give you an example of how they cross over. So if you look at Marxism, for example, and try and fit that into traditional determinism and nihilism, probably the majority of Buddhist scholars and so on think that Marxism is nihilistic because Marxism is materialist, doesn't believe in souls or religion or any of that stuff. But at the same time, Marxism believes in the communist society at the end of history, believes in a destiny for the whole human race, which it's working towards inevitably. And it's got this, what amounts to a huge sort of moral justification coming from that for Marxist activity, which is, although it's kind of theoretically undermined by the determinism, so what you do in theory doesn't make any difference, in practice, that's motivated Marxists through time to do extreme things in some cases, such as sending lots of people to Siberia and so on. So there isn't a clear relationship. You can't say, oh, well, Marxism is nihilist or Marxism is determinist, and the reason why it's wrong is because it fits into this bunch of categories. You know, the philosophies are complex, and the relationship between what people believe in and what they actually do and what motivates them, what their psychological states are, is complex. But that doesn't mean there isn't one. But I think we have to pay regard to that complexity and try and understand what the Buddha's getting at in a more investigative way, really, what boils down to the relationship between psychology and philosophy, how philosophies might make a difference to how we actually live our lives. Okay, so I was just talking about the issues with the traditional ways of thinking about eternalism and nihilism, and how it's possible to move on from that in understanding them in a way. Obviously, another reason for moving on is to do with the kinds of things that are assumed in the accounts of eternalism and nihilism in traditional Buddhism. So, the belief in karma and rebirth is one obvious example of a belief in traditional Buddhism which is assumed to be compatible with the middle way, even though it appears to fit a lot of the criteria for eternalism. So that's one of the other strains. It's one of the things that quite early on made me think, well, there's something wrong here. These contradictions, they're not sort of useful contradictions even. They're not leading me into a greater mystery. They're just confusing the issue. There's certainly an issue with the consistency with which the middle way is understood in traditional Buddhism. If you understand the middle way as a moral middle way, as a guide as to how to balance our responses, to me that also doesn't fit with the idea of trying to get good karma, for example. You know, it's not that process of balancing our responses and our judgments in experience that's going on there. You know, if you're trying to get good karma, then you're much more likely to try and do that by following the rules which you believe are operating in the universe, which will make sure that you get good karma and get a better rebirth, or indeed lead you onto enlightenment.